Tuesday, July 8th. July 8th. This is Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Kevin McCrory in for Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And today we're going to be talking about President Donald Trump's big, beautiful bill. If you were anywhere near the news on July 4th, you probably saw images of him signing the big, beautiful bill into law. So it locks in and expands tax cuts for individuals and businesses, slashes funding for safety net programs like Medicaid and SNAP, and funnels billions toward Trump-aligned agenda items. But today on Studio 2, we're going to talk about the impact in our region, right here in Pennsylvania. How deeply and how quickly will we feel the benefits and burdens of the big, beautiful bill? And we'll talk about the politics of it all. We'll take a look down the road to the midterms. And we'll also talk about the Pennsylvania budget negotiations, which are going on right now in Harrisburg. As we said, it's July 8th and we don't have a budget yet. We're a few days late.
Yeah, a lot going on both at the national and state level in terms of politics. And we've done some shows where we've debated the merits of all these proposals and these bills. And now we're going to unpack with some reporters today, really the local impact.
The impact. How are we going to feel it? And we want to encourage you to join the conversation. Our questions of the day are this. How do you think the new Trump budget will impact the 2026 midterms? Yes, they are coming. And the follow-up there is, which party do you think will benefit and why? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, hello, drop those comments in the chat. So I really hope that you participate because there's always political ramifications. Like one thing happens, it leads to other things. So we look forward to hearing your commentary. And so, Kevin, we have our trio of news stories.
Yeah, before we get to the big conversation, as always, local news stories. So number one story day after day, it is day 8 of the Philadelphia blue collar worker strike and negotiations are set to resume today. Inquirer out with a story detailing that more than 100 Philadelphia Water Department supervisors have been working 24/7 shifts at the city's 6 water treatment facilities since the strike began last week to ensure the city has safe drinking water. What was interesting here is there was a city judge last week that approved an injunction forcing some DC 33 members back to work exactly in these departments, and it's a little unclear why that injunction didn't force those folks back to work, and maybe some of them, but the Inquirer cited sources saying there were call-outs essentially that still made it so that the managers had to be there doing the work on these 24/7 shifts. Of course, you know, clean, reliable water to the city of Philadelphia is a gigantic responsibility and need that needs to be met. So that continues. Meanwhile, trash collection continues to be the linchpin in this conversation.
Yeah.
And we're seeing different behavior, I would say, in different neighborhoods across the city. In some, you see the curbsides are staying clean, no trash, and these kind of temporary dumpsters seem to be working. In other neighborhoods, in other places, not so much.
Yeah. And the pressure is mounting, though, on the Parker administration. And, you know, our mayor is facing a lot of criticism from residents who are sympathetic to the union and the workers. But this morning, the head of the Building Trades Union, Ryan Boyer, put out a statement on social media. He is calling for more civility. Boyer shared with us a screenshot of a person who actually posted the mayor's home address online, telling people that that is where they should bring their trash. And so in his post, Boyer says that even in the most combative of negotiations, this type of doxing behavior crosses a line. And he says, quote, "We live in a time where elected officials are being gunned down in their homes. Posting the mayor's address is a poorly veiled threat. It's cowardly," he says, "and I won't stand by while it happens." And folks are really nervous that, you know, given the rhetoric, given some of the incidents that have been happening during the strike, that this things could ramp up. And you know, folks wanted to quiet that rhetoric down.
Yeah, and we should note, right, like Ryan Boyer mentions, he's a very strong union ally.
He is very pro-union.
He's also a very big Sherelle Parker supporter. You could say that his building trades union really were the
mayor,
engine
yes.
that got her elected, and her support for labor and big construction projects was kind of a bit of that symbiotic
yeah.
relationship.
And people online have used foul language against the mayor. I mean, people were angry. Yeah. People are angry, but he wanted people to bring the red roof
and
down.
To yeah. his point, I think that we should kind of ground this conversation in the facts, as mm-hmm. we always try to do on Studio 2. So here's the facts. The average union worker, as we've been saying, makes $46,000 a year. That's in an era when the cost of living has gotten so much higher, and it's below the living wage needed
yeah.
for a single person without kids, mm-hmm. according to the MIT Living Wage Calculator. So that's fact number one. Fact number two is, you know, the mayor of Philadelphia's job is not to bend to the will of the loudest voice in the room. There are lots of competing priorities and interests and only limited resources. Like, that's
yeah.
period, full stop, what yeah. local government is. Parker says her offer is one that's fiscally sound for the city. And she said in a press conference last week she's willing to even be a one-term mayor if necessary because she thinks her plan is sound and fair.
Yeah, yeah. Not her fault, but definitely a problem she has to fix. And so our second story of the day, the owners of Comcast and the 76ers just purchased a string of properties worth about $56 million in the Market East section of the city. And the plots, they're located between 9th and 11th Streets along Market Street. And the sales are raising speculation that Harris Blitzer Sports Entertainment plans to develop that section of the city and that those plans are still alive and well. If you recall, at the heels of that 76 place arena disaster, you remember that all that political capital, the mayor had backed this arena that was going to be right downtown. And then the Sixers folks just backed out last minute and said that they were willing to be in the stadium district down in South Philadelphia, rejoining with Comcast in that effort. But they promised, they said, look, we're going to still redevelop, you know, Market East. And the mayor said that she believed in them. And it seems like maybe that might be true.
Well, that was their pitch the whole time, was this is mm-hmm. going to redevelop Market East. You know, there's a lot of vacant properties there, a lot of rundown properties there. And it's kind of been this stretch of the city, the core downtown part of the city, that hasn't been developed in a way that has been very attractive to a lot of people and tourists and residents and such. And so I think some were hoping the arena could be that, or would help that. And then
but
when,
it's caused so
when
much
the
political
arena backed
controversy.
Out,
yeah.
Now it was like, okay, is there really going to be a plan? At least today we're seeing that Comcast and Harris Blitzer are coming through at least on buying some of these properties. It's still, there's no details here. What is this going to look like? What is this going to be? Mm-hmm. Is there a grand vision for this stretch of the city, as, you know, some of the experts that we've talked to said there should be? That doesn't seem to be materializing yet, but maybe we'll find that out soon too.
Yeah. By the way, David Edelman, one of the limited partners with Harris Blitzer, told the Inquirer or issued a statement saying that they would be developing plans, and at the right time, they would release those plans publicly. So we'll wait and see.
All right, third story tonight, Cherry. In the New York Times today, a love letter to, I love love letters.
I love love.
A love letter to, of all things, the New Jersey Turnpike.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So it's a heartfelt ode
by
writer Simon Wu, who grew up in Richboro, which is in Bucks County, and now lives in Brooklyn, and essentially making the argument that, like, the New Jersey Turnpike is this underappreciated passport between diverse destinations. Lots of flowery prose in this piece, Cherry. So let me read you a couple highlights.
Okay.
Payment of the fee grants you access to a long, flat amusement park, which funnels you into a dizzying number of random worlds along its spine. The ugly, raw vistas usher me out of suburbia, quickly turning me from my parents' baby into a tax-paying adult, as if the refineries also
Simon
refine
Wu.
Me.
I don't know. I don't know, Simon Wu. But I will say this, for those of us who fear mergers, you know, merging, missing exits, and think Route 1 is like, you know, a threat, I would say that, you know, the prose is pretty well done.
Very well written.
It's gorgeous.
I think it's a masterclass in freelance pitching.
Sure. It's very good. And I will say that I'm not, you know me, Kevin. I tell you, if it has too many numbers in the roads, I'm riding with you because I'm not driving.
Yeah.
But he did a great job. I mean, and it made me want to, you know, rethink you know, my own grudges about roads and Jersey and all that.
It kind of got me poetically inspired.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, my own ode to I-95.
Okay, poker face for this.
Rolling northward on I-95 and absorbing the vast approach of Philadelphia, I come upon a sublime array of injury lawyer billboards. Some call this a visual assault on the senses, but no, alas, I see the diamond-coated glimmer of capitalism in all its raging top-dog glory, offering us mere mortal motorists the chance to hold those who've harmed us to account. And in that moment, the power of the personal injury lawyer ad budget gleams on high, as if to say, look on my works, ye mighty, and despair.
You ran with Simon Woo. You ran with this. Good job, Kevin. I mean, you know, this is how you make the New Jersey Turnpike into prose and poetry. Congratulations on that.
Hat tip to Piercy Bysshe Shelley, too. I stole a little bit from him.
All right. And coming up next, we're going to be talking about the Big Beautiful Bill and the impact on Pennsylvania, as well as budget talks in Harrisburg. We'll be right back. Stick with us.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg. My co-host, Avi Wolfman-Arendt, is off today. President Trump's Big Beautiful Bill, a sweeping tax and spending plan, was signed into law July 4th. It's being sold by Republicans as a win for working families, small businesses, and the economy. But critics say it's a giveaway to the wealthy that guts key safety net programs like Medicaid and SNAP. The impact on Pennsylvania could be profound, from tax changes to health care coverage to the state budget battle currently playing out in Harrisburg. So who really wins? Who really loses under Trump's budget? And how will it ultimately affect the wallets, health care, and future of Pennsylvania families? With me for the rest of the hour to parse through this and a whole lot more is Julia Taruso, national political reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Welcome back to Studio 2, Julia.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
And we also have Katie Meyer, government reporter and editor for Spotlight PA. Katie, it's good to see you and welcome back to Studio 2.
Great to be here.
And for our listeners at home and beyond, we invite you to join the conversation. Our questions of the day are this: what do you think the new Trump budget How do you think the new Trump budget will impact the 2026 midterms, and which party will benefit and why? We'd love to hear from you. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, put those comments in the live chat. And so I want to get started by breaking out this big, beautiful bill into the buckets. There are three main components in my mind. First, the tax cuts and breaks. It extends the 2017 tax cuts, adds some new breaks. That's number one. Number two, it slashes spending on key federal programs. We talked about Medicaid, SNAP. But then the third thing, it spends billions on Trump allocated policies. And so, Julia, it's being called big, bold, and brutal, depending on who you ask. And I just want you to, if you're a typical working class American, what should you be paying attention to? What are the big things you should be focused on?
Sure. So, yeah, as you said, I mean, this is a 900 plus page bill. I think we're still learning some of the things that were in it. But in terms of the main components, those 2017 tax credits are extended. So that's going to disproportionately impact wealthier Americans. But almost everyone will see their taxes not increase because of what passed. And then I think the main component, you know, in order to pay for this huge increase in border and defense spending, there are cuts to Medicaid and SNAP. So some projections in Pennsylvania from Governor Shapiro's office show that as many as 140,000 people who rely on SNAP could lose those benefits. Medicaid Medicaid. I think the number's around 300,000 people. And the reason has to do with changes they're making to the program, primarily in SNAP. It's kind of the way that it'll be funded, and more funding is going to have to come from the state. And for Medicaid, they're implementing work requirements and more frequent verification that you need this assistance, which, you know, could really impact people getting that in time, being able to access it, and then, you know, some people who aren't eligible falling off the rolls.
Yeah, and Katie, if you're regular Pennsylvanian working class, are there any good things that come from this?
Well, I think it depends on who you ask. Certainly there are people who are going to be happy to see like things like tax cuts. I'll say, I mean, we've focused more on just like what is the impact of the policy going to be, both on people, as Julia was saying, but also on the state budget. And so, you know, when you look at the knock-on effects from stuff like this, I think you will see, you know, the state having to make some hard decisions when it comes to funding different programs. And so, again, that's what we've been looking at more. As we talk to more and more voters, especially as the midterms come up, I think we're going to get a clearer picture of how people are taking this. If people are happy to see these kind of tax cuts and tax breaks, you know, again, they're mostly for the wealthy, but, you know, maybe we'll see how people feel about them.
Yeah. And one of the things that Republicans have been selling is the, you know, you get some of the sweeteners, right? Mm. Julia, you're good if you make tax or if you make tips. You don't have to pay taxes on that. For all the people who have overtime pay, there's going to be some car loan, you know, things that you can get written off on your taxes, the child tax credits. How would that impact Pennsylvanians in a positive way at all? And I'm just wondering, I know a lot of that expires, by the way, but how will that impact Pennsylvanians?
Sure. Yeah. I think, as Katie said, you know, it depends on your life and your situation. But one interesting thing about this bill is there are elements like you just mentioned, you know, no tax on tips and overtime, which expire after a couple years. Then there are those changes to Medicaid, some of which actually aren't even going to take effect for 1 to 2 years. So the impacts, I think, will be felt in varying ways across a different timeline. Right now, you know, as the bill was being passed and it was in the news, it was very unpopular in polling. So I think we're going to see kind of a messaging war of Republicans trying to, like you said, you know, highlight some of those sweeteners and Democrats trying to build on the unpopularity that we saw so far.
And before we dig more into the Pennsylvania impact, I got to ask you about the spending, because a lot of Trump's priorities focused on, you know, ICE and Border Patrol and all those things. Will we be feeling any of that, the spending increase at all?
You know, to the extent there are military bases in Pennsylvania, they might see some benefits to the defense spending. There's a lot of money in here for border security and ICE. You know, some projections say $3.3 trillion is going to be the increase to the deficit. So definitely might see some of that here. I think air traffic control is getting some money from this bill too. So airports might see some of that.
Yeah. Are there some things in here, Katie, that you think, we've been talking about Medicaid, we've been talking about SNAP a whole lot. Can you dig into the impact of that? And then are there other things we should be paying attention to that will impact Pennsylvanians that we are not talking about every single day? Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So one of the things that we looked most significantly at here at Spotlight was SNAP, just because the effects on the state budget are really direct in that case. Mm-hmm. And the effects of on like people are also pretty direct. So like Julia said, a lot of people use SNAP in Pennsylvania. It's about 2 million people. Most of those are children under 18 and then adults over 55. So the oldest and youngest people. So what would happen under SNAP is a couple different things. There are, just like with Medicaid, there are work requirements for certain people who use it. But the bigger thing is it changes states' responsibilities for the program. Mm. And so what that means is basically right now states pay about half the cost for administering SNAP. And this is not just Pennsylvania. This is everywhere. the states have to take on more of the administrative costs, so about 75% under this bill. And the other thing that happens is that based on a state's error rate, so when it wrongly gives benefits or wrongly doesn't give benefits, that all gets into the error rate. Based on how high that rate is, states are going to have to cover a portion of the actual benefits that go to people. And that's new. And so we don't know exactly how much money the state's going to be on the hook for, but it's going to be a lot. Based on the current error rate, it would be around $650 million, somewhere in that ballpark. And that's on top of the additional administrative costs that are definitely getting passed on. So it's a lot of money, and that's money the state just cannot make up. And we can talk a little bit more about where the state budget is in a minute, but it's a significant impact, and that's going to mean probably a change in benefits for people. So that's something we're watching.
And so that could mean if you can't backfill that, that means that there's going to be people who are going to lose their benefits.
It would seem, yeah. Again, we are not totally sure how this is all going to shake out. It is not happening, again, in this year's budget. This would kick in or start to kick in 2026. And then there would be additional impacts down the line. But that's kind of the neighborhood that we're looking at. And you also asked about just like other places where we're looking at impact. Yeah. One thing I'll just flag, and like there's, as Julia said, there's a huge universe of stuff that's affected here. Climate-related programs are a big one, energy programs. So in Pennsylvania, we had two hydrogen hubs that were planned for the state, one in western Pennsylvania, one around Philadelphia. And there's going to be pretty significant impact from that. A lot of that comes from big Biden-era spending bills, and much of that funding has been affected by this bill. So again, still figuring out exactly what the numbers are going to look like, what specific projects still are happening or are not happening. But you're going to see a lot of plans that were made in recent years for pretty large investments using federal dollars that are not going to happen.
Yeah, and I want to play this clip from Governor Josh Shapiro. He posted this video, at least this is an excerpt from a video he posted on his TikTok last night, explaining how he sees the big, beautiful bill. Take a listen.
So I want you to know what they voted for, okay? They voted to give a tax cut to those at the highest income brackets, who frankly don't need it, and to pay for it by slashing Medicaid and SNAP and harming rural hospitals. This isn't politics. This isn't hyperbole. They knew what they were voting for. They voted for it. It's now law in Pennsylvania.
And Katie, I wanted to follow up with you because rural hospitals, we've covered on the show just a number of hospitals in Pennsylvania that have closed. We even have had some closures in the Philadelphia region. How much of an impact could this have on, you know, people's access to medical care in that way?
Yeah, we've heard a good amount from hospitals about this bill. The kind of mechanism that's at work here is the Medicaid reimbursement rates that states get using a portion of federal dollars. And that is being reduced under this bill. And so rural hospitals, because they have fewer patients, it affects them more. And so Pennsylvania's Hospital and Health System Association has said that, yeah, again, there's going to be really specific harsh impacts for rural hospitals. They're going to have to cut services, things like that.
Yeah. And I think about this, Julia, we talked about the timing of this. It feels kind of sneaky in a lot of ways because people will get the impact of all the sweeteners and the good things in this bill, but the pain points, like the rural hospitals, the Medicaid cuts won't come until after the midterms. Can you talk about the intentionality behind this? Have you heard anything about that part in Washington?
Sure. I mean, I think it's often typical for politicians to look down the line to when elections are and factor some of that into the policy making. But I do think it's worth noting again that, you know, the early polling on the bill is that sweeteners as they are, it's not popular. Yeah. And so, you know, I do think it's kind of for now, Republicans who are running a little upwind to try to reclaim the narrative and to tout some of these other things in the bill while trying to defend against a really clear message, which is, you know, benefits are being cut, Medicaid is being cut, hospitals could close. You know, these are real unpopular things that the bill could do, even if it is 2 years down the line.
Yeah,
three
they still
years
have to
the
sell
line.
It to the American mm-hmm. people. And so joining us now to share her take on this Republican tax and spending bill is Congresswoman Mary Gay Scanlon, a Democrat who represents Pennsylvania's 5th Congressional District. And I should say before we bring on the Congresswoman is that we've invited several Republican Congress members from our region onto the show, but they were not able to join us. So I want to say welcome to Representative Scanlon. Welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me on.
Yes. And so I wanted to sort of ask you about this bill. What part of the legislation do you think will hurt Pennsylvanians the most?
Well, let me count the ways. There's a lot that's really going to impact Pennsylvania. And I think the governor's been really clear about some of the really tough pieces of the bill, particularly around healthcare. So it does have projected large cuts to Medicaid, people who will lose their coverage. But with the failure to extend the supplements for the Affordable Care Act, people who get their insurance through the exchange will see their costs go up. Private insurance will go up because everybody will end up having to pick up some of that slack. We know that the SNAP cuts are going to impact not just folks getting SNAP, but it's also going to affect our school lunch programs because so many kids are eligible for school lunch through SNAP. If they're no longer eligible through SNAP, if they lose coverage that way, it puts a burden onto the schools to do the work of trying to see who's eligible. So the school districts have been really clear that that's an issue. There are things that are going to happen. I know you were talking about how some of the cuts don't come into play for a couple of years, but some things are going to be more immediate. They have eliminated the tax credits for buying an electric vehicle. That ends, if you want an electric vehicle, you'd better go do it before September is over. They have ended a lot of tax credits that were being used to fund clean energy. So that means job losses are going to be happening sooner rather than later. There are cuts to eligibility for student loans. They're going to cap student loans for folks who are in graduate programs. So there's a lot in here that people are going to see the brunt of pretty quickly.
Yeah. And so Democrats voted as a block against this bill, but it passed anyway. And so what is the strategy now in Washington among Democrats? What do you do now that this is already rolled out? It's rolling out. How do you sort of counter what the Republicans are doing?
Well, it's rolling out with universal support from the White House, with every Republican in the Senate voting for it. In fact, almost every Senate Republican voting for it. J.D. Vance, the vice president, had to cast a vote to make sure it advanced in the House. Almost every Republican voted for it. So the Republican Party owns this. You mentioned that Democrats voted in a block against it, in part because we were not allowed any role in crafting this bill. This is a 100% White House Speaker Johnson Senate Majority Leader bill. And that's one of the reasons it is absolutely held captive to special interests, whether it's wealthy developers or the NRA or fossil fuel industry. I mean, all those folks have stuff tucked in here. We offered over 480 amendments in the House. They refused to accept a single one of them.
Wow. Your House colleague, Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick, one of two Democrats who held out and voted no on this bill. One of the few. Let me just restate that whole thing.
Okay.
Your colleague, a Republican colleague, Brian Fitzpatrick, one of two Republican holdouts who voted no on this bill. Mm-hmm. First of all, I want to get your thoughts on his decision to vote no. And then have you talked to him at all about that decision?
No, it's still a bit of a mystery why he decided to vote that way. He voted to pat. So this bill has ping-ponged back and forth between the House and Senate, and he voted to move it ahead to the Senate initially and then changed his mind later, unclear exactly why. And when he voted, he kind of voted and left the chamber, so we weren't able to ask him directly.
Yeah. And so now, you know, Julia Taruso just said this is not a very popular bill. People, most Americans don't like it. They hear Medicaid cuts and they get very, very nervous. And so what is going to be the strategy sort of talking about this bill as Democrats as you try to counter whatever the Republican selling points are?
Well, I think we need to keep talking about the bill because it is going to keep rolling out. And every report we get on it gets worse, whether it's exposing additional things that were included in the bill at the last minute, like taking away excise taxes on silencers and sawed-off shotguns, or whether it's the updated assessments of what the bill's going to cost. At the time it came back over to the House from the Senate, the Congressional Budget Office said that it's going to add $3.4 trillion to our national deficit. Other estimates that have come out since then, including one by the conservative Cato Institute, say it could be as much as $6 trillion. Yeah. So I think as it becomes clearer, the damage that this will do, because it was so rushed, you know, that people didn't have a complete picture of where the pain points were going to be. But in the midst of the debate, we got a report from the National Nursing Homes Association that they expect 1 in 4 nursing homes in this country to go out of business, including some in our area. Wow. So we need to make sure that people know what's in this bill. I mean, what Congress passes, Congress can repeal. So, you know, our hope is always to convince our Republican colleagues to come to the table and try to pass a bill that is good for the American people as opposed to just the billionaires. And if they don't want to do that, then I think the public should take matters into the ballot box.
And so thank you so much, Congresswoman Mary Gay Scanlon, for being on Studio 2.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. And for you, our listeners at home, we invite you to join the conversation. Right now, the question is, how do you think the new Trump budget will impact the 2026 midterms and which party will benefit and why? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And before we go to a break, I want to bring in Trish from, we're already going to the break. Sorry about that. When we come back, we'll dig into the midterms coming up in 2026. And we'll also talk about the Pennsylvania budget negotiations happening right now in Harrisburg. You don't want to miss it. Make sure you call us 888-477-9499 and weigh in. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg. Before we get back into the conversation, our next event is coming up next week. And it's a good one for the trivia lovers and big fans of Studio 2. Join me and Avi as we compete against each other in the Great Philly Pop Culture Showdown. Come cheer us on and test your own knowledge of movies, music, and general pop culture. There will be plenty of audience participation. So let me give you the details. The event is in Wayne at 118 North Venue next Wednesday, July 16th at 6 p.m. There are a limited number of tickets still available. You can go to whyy.org/events to reserve your spot at the Great Philly Pop Culture Showdown. Again, July 16th at 6 p.m. at 118 North in Wayne. And we hope to see you there. It's going to be on. Okay, Team Cherry versus Team Avi when he gets back. It's going to be a lot of fun. And so turning back to our roundtable, we've been talking about the Republican tax and spending package that was just signed into law by President Trump and the impact here at home. And yesterday, Governor Shapiro commented about the bill at a press conference in York, saying that an estimated 310,000 Pennsylvanians will lose Medicaid and 140,000 will lose food assistance. Take a listen.
So I want you to know what they voted for. Okay. They voted to give a tax cut to those at the highest income brackets who frankly don't need it and to pay for it by slashing Medicaid and SNAP and harming rural hospitals. This isn't politics. This isn't hyperbole. They knew what they were voting for. They voted for it. It's now law in Pennsylvania. Let me be very clear. Pennsylvania can't backfill this. We don't have the money to do it. I warned these members of Congress that we couldn't do it. And so the cuts that are about to come are coming as a direct result of how your federal representatives voted here.
And we will peel back the layers of what the governor had to say in just a moment. Our question to you, our listeners this hour, is how do you think the new Trump budget bill will impact you? What do you think it will mean for the state's budget as Pennsylvania budget fight drags on? Let me give you the number, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And let me bring in a caller. We have Trish from Newport, Delaware on the line. Trish, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi. My comment is a lot of people are talking about the $3.3 trillion increase to our deficit. But when Republicans are talking about why they have to cut everything is because our debt is $36 trillion. So this bill over the next 10 years will add at least $16 trillion to our debt, putting our debt well over $50 trillion. And also the work requirements for Medicaid's food stamps, what's going to happen to people when there's a recession and they just can't work?
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot in this bill. Thank you, Trish, from Newport, Delaware. I want to bring in another caller right now, Joanne from Wilmington, Delaware. A lot of our Delaware callers calling in today. Joanne, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
I have two questions. With the cuts to Medicaid and SNAP, won't that have to force the states to increase state tax? So we're really not getting any benefit. And my second question is, please comment or dive deeper into the tax cut on tips, because it, in my understanding, is that there are a lot of restrictions regarding that tax cut, and that it really isn't as glorious or beautiful as it's being painted.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's Joanne from Wilmington, Delaware. And so, Julia, can you help with the tips question, or, you know, Katie, can either of you help with that? Are there some restrictions? Is there a cap on it? How does that work?
Yeah, I think I'm not an expert on this provision, but there are definitely some stipulations. It does expire after a couple years, and so I think there is some fine print worth reading there. And you know, on Medicaid, I think that's an excellent question, and part of what, you know, the state is going to be talking, or the state legislature is talking about right now as they figure out their budget, is, you know, what this means for Pennsylvania taxpayers.
Yeah. And as you heard Governor Shapiro say, I mean, his position is that the state does not have the money to backfill these cuts. And so what that means is reduction in services. So, yes, I mean, it could technically mean that, like, if the state was going to try to backfill these things, that we could see, you know, sales tax increases, income tax increases, increases to other things. That's been very politically difficult for Pennsylvania lawmakers to accomplish in not just like recent years, but in recent memory. And so I would not say like a broad-based tax increase is especially likely here. But, it, you know, to her point, that just means that, yeah, the service cuts probably stand.
And so, Katie, let's talk about the Pennsylvania budget negotiations. It's July 8th.
It is.
I mean, and we don't have a budget. What are the major sticking points that you're seeing in Harrisburg?
There are a couple. Basically, it's that the money doesn't work. The math doesn't work. So we have a couple major obligations that state lawmakers, you know, feel pretty committed to paying for, depending on who they are. A big one is education. The state had a ruling handed down a few years ago that said that Pennsylvania was not meeting its obligations to fairly funding public education, and that it needed to make it more equitable across the state. What that's looked like in practice is lawmakers agreeing to put more money toward the poorest public school districts. And so that's been a big chunk of change. They spent a lot of money on that in last year's budget. They intend to do it again. And so that is already a couple hundred million dollars that are going to go to the poorest public schools. We don't know exactly what it's going to look like yet. Republicans always want to spend a little bit less, but that's an obligation they kind of have to stick with. Otherwise, they're going to go back to court, most likely. So that's one thing. And then the other thing here in Philadelphia, very important, is transit funding. And so making sure that SEPTA and other smaller but very important transit agencies across the state that are all publicly funded or partly funded by the state, get additional funding. They've pretty much en masse complained that they're going to have to pass what they call like doomsday budgets. They're approaching a fiscal cliff as federal funding runs out, and so they need more state, you know, supplement. And that has been pretty politically tricky, but that's another big thing that they have to contend with.
Another thing that stood out to me about the state budget is that they're going to be spending $5 billion more than they actually bring in revenue. And they do have some money sort of, out, you know, in a rainy day fund.
Yeah.
But how can you continuously spend more than you make?
You brought up one of my favorite things to talk about when it comes to the budget, which is the structural deficit. Pennsylvania, for years and years, has spent more than it makes in revenue. It happens every year. And you're right. Right now, we do have a surplus. We have a budget surplus that carried over from last year, and we have some money in the rainy day fund. A lot of that comes from good returns during the pandemic, as well as federal relief we got during the pandemic that plugged budget holes for a while. But the deficit is structural because underneath those, like, sometimes you get a good revenue year, underneath the picture is always kind of the same. We're spending more than we're taking in. And so often they can plug those gaps by, like, moving around money.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, if they spent down the entire surplus, they could get through another year. The problem would be then next year they're really kind of screwed. And so Republicans have been really pushing to start filling that structural deficit to either increase revenue in some way or to cut expenses. And that is where it gets hard. It's hard to do both of those things. So they've talked about, legalizing recreational marijuana. Doesn't look like they can get a deal on that. It's too hard for them to come up with a funding structure or a regulatory structure that everyone agrees on. They've talked about regulating and taxing skill games, which already exist in Pennsylvania. They're sort of like slot machines. You see them in convenience stores. That might still happen. But again, getting the regulatory structure agreed to has been hard. You've seen Republicans start talking about cutting Medicaid coverage for certain things like weight loss drugs like Ozempic. That would save the state some money. Wouldn't, cover the whole gap, but it would do a little bit. So things like that, you are seeing them talking about getting rid of certain sales tax exemptions. They have a hard time.
And before we pivot and bring Julia back into the conversation, got to ask you how the Trump agenda and all the, we've had funding freezes at universities, cuts, DOGE cuts, so many other things weigh in. How does that sort of, help or hurt these budget negotiations happening in Harrisburg?
It does affect things. In this particular budget, we're not suddenly faced with a several hundred million dollar hole that they have to fill. The numbers are relatively stable for the next fiscal year. Beyond that, though, there are big question marks. Do we want to backfill some of that Medicaid or that SNAP funding loss, for instance?
Yeah.
And those are going to be the things that they start talking about even right now.
Yeah. And so I want to encourage you, our listeners, to call in. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. How do you think the new Trump budget will impact you? What do you think it will mean for the state's budget? I'm going to read a couple comments. As we pivot a real, Aaliyah says, it's not going to matter, in my opinion. The Dems aren't fighting in a way that uses communication to really get people to understand that their lives are going to be turned upside down. And diehard MAGAs are not changing for anything. Maura says the Democratic Party is really going to come out on top in 2026, not including all the Democrats that are angry enough to get out and vote. I think we will have a lot of Republicans with buyer's remorse voting across party lines. And so I want to talk about the midterm elections with you, Julia. I mean, are there some vulnerable seats here in Pennsylvania? If so, what seats will you be watching?
Absolutely. Yeah. So as we talked about earlier, I think one of the surprises with the big, beautiful bill was Brian Fitzpatrick, who represents Bucks County, voting no. He previously voted yes, but voted no on this. And I think, in a purple moderate district, that could shield him from some of this in his reelection campaign. There are also three Republican held seats that Democrats are really hoping to take back. There's Representative Rob Bresnahan in Luzerne County. That's Northeast Pennsylvania. He actually represents the district with the most Medicaid receivers recipients of any Republican-held district, and he just won last year. Ryan McKenzie in the Lehigh Valley defeated Susan Wild last year by a very, very slim margin. Mm-hmm. And then there's Congressman Scott Perry, who's been a longtime congressman in York, who's kind of on the other side of this debate. He's a bit more of a fiscal hawk, wanted more cuts to this bill. But I think, you know, this is going to be the primary argument that Democrats bring to the midterms. You're already hearing Governor Shapiro talk about it. He's also on the ballot for re-election in 2026. And I think he'll be a big messenger for Democrats hoping to win in those swing districts.
And by the way, well, so what are you hearing about the gubernatorial race? We know Governor Shapiro will very likely run again. And so what are some of the things and whispers that are bubbling up there?
Yeah, well, we've heard interest from Congressman Dan Muser, who's also in the Northeast, and he's really been out in front, you know, championing this bill. He's been a longtime Trump supporter. And we've also heard interest from Stacey Garrity, the treasurer of the state, and she had some positive things to say about it. So I think as these effects are felt, or as Governor Shapiro kind of navigates some of these changes, it'll be a big issue in the gubernatorial race, regardless of who's running. We don't know if they're running it.
And Katie, I saw you perk up a little bit about the governor's race. Did you want to throw in something there?
Only that I think, you know, Shapiro's approval ratings have been good throughout his tenure here in Pennsylvania. He has cast himself, I think, pretty successfully as a pretty moderate Democrat. He's been out at a ton of, for instance, like pro-business press conferences, even just recently, whenever something, you know, opens a new like manufacturing project, that kind of thing, you'll see Josh Shapiro there. And that's not an accident. I think he wants to be, you know, showing that his administration wants to bring jobs to Pennsylvania. So I think you can really expect that. There were a lot of clean energy projects, we mentioned this, that were sort of casualties of this bill. And they're already things that this administration has talked about a lot.
Interesting. And so I got to ask you, because you just had a story that came out, Julia, about a new book that dropped today talking about Governor Shapiro, and specifically why former Vice President Kamala Harris did not choose him as her running mate. Give us a scoop here.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's not my scoop, but all the books are coming out. We're getting a flashback to last summer. Yes, this is a book by three reporters who covered the presidential election, and kind of parts of it dive into those moments when Vice President Harris was deciding who she was going to pick as her running mate. And some of this was reported, but there were some interesting details about how when it came down to Shapiro and Governor Walz, you know, there were a lot of concerns about if Shapiro was really a number two, if he was a little too ambitious for the job, and some reporting about a call he made to the campaign after his in-person interview with Vice President Harris, in which he said he wasn't sure if he was ready to leave his job as Pennsylvania governor. Mm-hmm. I also thought an interesting detail they decided to include was that when they asked for their drink orders, what they wanted to drink while they met with the vice president, Shapiro asked for water and Tim Walz asked for a Diet Mountain Dew. So I think that was meant to show the style differences in the two candidates. But yeah, it was kind of rehashing some of what went into her decision. And, you know, I think it also contributes to the widely known narrative he has wider ambitions.
Yeah. And I know we only have a few minutes left, but I have to talk about Congressman Dwight Evans, who recently announced that he is going to retire, will not seek re-election in 2026. People are already throwing their hat in the ring. Julia, I know State Senator Sharice Street already launched his campaign website on July 1st. What are you hearing, and how contentious do you think this race will be?
I think this is going to be a really exciting race. We have not had a competitive Democratic primary in Philadelphia for a congressional race in quite some time. Congressman Evans is stepping away, retiring from a seat that is the most Democratic seat in the country, congressional district in the country. You know, the state party chairman, Sharice Street, has announced he's in. Today, another state representative, Chris Rabb, who's more of a progressive lawmaker, announced he's in. I think we could see more elected officials, more non-elected officials. I think it's going to be a lot of fun heading into May or April. April.
Yeah, yeah.
They haven't actually set a primary date yet. But
spring of next year. Yes. And so as we get ready to wrap up, I want to sort of talk about, you know, this big budget bill, you know, this budget negotiation going on in Harrisburg. Will all of the things that you see happening now, do you think that people will have a long enough memory? Do you think this will really impact midterms and the gubernatorial election coming up? Your thoughts. And Katie, go first.
Sure. I mean, I can only speak really to the state budget and how that usually works out. If they get a deal in the next couple of weeks, I think it's water under the bridge. Nobody cares about a delay that goes that short. I'll say if they keep delaying, if they can't get a deal and like August rolls around, we go even further than that, you are going to see real impacts. So funding to schools starts getting affected, funding to like children and youth programs in counties, mental health programs in counties, libraries, things that people use every day, they do start to miss payments from the state. And that can lead to really hard decisions. Now, in general, they figure out a way to make that not happen. There are lots of ways that the state can keep payments flowing. But it's a real risk. It can happen. And so if we are in that bad of an impasse, I think you're going to start to see political ramifications.
Yeah. And so 2026 midterms, this big, beautiful bill. Do you really see this having a major impact in the midterms?
I think it could. I mean, I think it's Trump's signature domestic package. And in addition to other things the administration is doing that aren't necessarily that popular, I think Democrats are nervous about what this could mean for their constituents, but maybe politically a little optimistic about what it could mean for their chances next year.
Yeah. And just historically, typically the party in power kind of loses big on that first midterm after a general election. So we'll see what happens. I want to say thank you to both of you for being here with me for this political roundtable on Studio 2. Thank you so much. I'm trying to Katie Meyer with Spotlight PA, government reporter and editor. Also, thank you so much to Julia Taruso, a national political reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. I appreciate it, both of you.
Thank you so much.
Here with Studio 2. And thank you so much to all of you who called in today and wrote in. Sorry I couldn't get to everybody, like Rob and Mary Jo on YouTube. Thank you for watching. And thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, and to Al Banks and Tina Calique, who engineered today's show. Our executive producer and my guest host for the roundup this morning, or this early this afternoon, with Kevin McCrory. And from Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg. Thank you so much for joining me.